Cherry Developer News, episode 10 for Monday, March 22nd, 2010. I'm Ken Rimple.
Gordon Dickens.
A lot of stuff today on Java, actually, so let's settle in. If you want to look at the bookmarks, you can go to delicious.com/developernews/10. We'll link to that in the show notes page as well. So why don't we start out, Gordon, by talking about some things around Spring.
Okay, great. I found a very interesting blog post from the SpringSource blog, blog.springsource.com. It's about the an EIP example by Oleg Zarkovsky, I believe his name is pronounced.
Yes.
And it's a really interesting and informative blog posting illustrating a loan broker type example with some great images that he put into there and code examples, which you can actually download the full example of. And it gives you a good picture of using EIP in a Spring application and you know, it's using obviously the Spring integration components underneath. So it's a pretty good thing to look at if you're considering any EIP or
and EIP meaning Enterprise Integration Patterns, right?
Right, the old book. Right. I am sorry about that.
No, yeah, that's
that.
Okay.
And you know, the Spring integration does provide a lot of those EIP, those patterns, EIP patterns, right? So,
and actually, if you look through it, it's really nice because they go through the use case, and then they go through particular pieces of the use case. It's like, for example, submitting a loan quote request, and they say that's a message gateway pattern, and then right below describing it, they actually have the XML configuration to do it. So. Interesting stuff.
Sure, and at the bottom, there's the SVN link to the actual code, like I said, you can get.
Yep. Okay. I'll take the next one. So EH Cache is a caching engine that's been around for a while. They just released 2.0. This is an article on Indic Threads, INDIC, and this is for March 17th. The headline reads, EH Cache 2.0 offers Grails integration and scaling without code changes. So actually, you can use EH Cache as a cache for your second level cache in Hibernate. So if you want to, you know, cache query results or, you know, code tables that you refer to periodically, you can turn on a second level cache in Hibernate and EH Cache 2.0 plugs into that. You can also use EH Cache now as a distributed cache. So they've added the feature to kind of distribute it over a number of nodes to increase your performance even further. And they're actually kind of hooking it into things like Terracotta Web Sessions, job schedulers with Quartz, things like that. They also claim that they have a Grails plugin available as well. So interesting to check out. And again, it's called EH Cache. And if you've worked with it before, take a look at it. It's a new version.
Very cool. And the next item that we'll talk about here is a blog posting from Guillaume Naudet. He is the he's a big committer to the Apache projects. He's worked with ServiceMix ESB. He's been big and pivotal in that project. And this week he wrote a blog posting about SpringDM, the Aries Blueprint, and custom namespaces. And I took a look at this because I've been working a lot with OSGI in the last year or so. And working with the Spring DM, which is basically Spring Dynamic Modules, it's a way for you to use Spring code in an OSGI environment, and it provides some of the facets that you need to make each of your application bundles, which is a module in OSGI, to make those work kind of independently and work in an OSGI environment.
So for example, if you're doing OSGI and you want to use Spring and you have a multi-layered application, whether it's horizontal with, you know, service layer versus database layer or whatever, or by slice of functionality, SpringDM is a way to do that.
That's right. Yeah. So it basically, a lot of the things that you know if you're a Spring developer, if you're familiar with you know, how to build your application context and such, that works in a more modular fashion. So each of the specific bundles would or functions of code, if you will, logical groupings of code, would have their own application context. Well, that's SpringDM, right? It has an extender service. And actually, SpringDM is the has defined the reference implementation for the OSGI Blueprint service, and that is basically providing an extender to the bundle manifest. So it could actually build or provide additional functionality during the process of packaging and bundling the product. Well, the bundle or actually during deployment and execution. I apologize. The Aries Blueprint and this blog post is really good to look at if you're going to do any of this or consider any of this. He talks about some of the challenges with SpringDM, and we kind of experienced these on a project I worked on where, you know, it's an asynchronous loading process, and if you won't know if one bundle is depending on something else running as far as a service. It'll just know that it's available. What they did in Apache Ares, he added some functionality to the extender, which is part of the Blueprint service, to actually find out objects are not only deployed but actually functioning and running, and then wait for that to work. So it's really good reading if you're considering to do any Spring DM OSGI projects. Just be aware. It's good to be aware of some of the things that you may need to work around and to consider Apache Ares.
So in a real world, so to speak, scenario, you're configuring a bundle, you're starting a bunch of bundles in your application, and one of those bundles maybe needs to get to an emailing service, let's say, that's in another bundle. And normally, you know, it might take, because it's connecting to things and setting up whatever, it might take 30 seconds for that to become available, but your thing that's using it might be available in 5 seconds, right? So timing-wise, it thinks the service is there, you kick something off and it blows up. That's the issue you have right now.
Yeah, and then he addresses some of those concerns. He says basically some ways that people get around that right now are they actually they'll order the bundle startup, so that basically you're saying, okay, this bundle starts before bundle B starts before bundle C. That's great, but it doesn't give you a lot of flexibility over time. You've got to go manage all of those dependencies, and that's a bit frustrating and kind of dilutes some of the benefit of OSGI.
Right.
So, yeah.
So this is the big improvement over that, or in terms of like just deployment issues.
Right. This definitely for a server startup concern, making sure that services are ready to go and mm-hmm. ready to listen before something else comes to them for information. And again, Ares is still in the incubator stage. Mm-hmm. So you look at the PDFs and see the information there. Look at the blueprint aspect and look at his blog. It's GNODET.blogspot.com, and you'll find that article.
Great. Okay. On the other more Java EE side of the fence, we're talking a bit about Spring here. Let's jump over to Java EE. So Lincoln Baxter, who is actually coming to Philadelphia Emerging Technologies as a member of the JBoss team, has an open source project out there called Pretty Faces. It's a JSF feature set of some sort, which I hate to say, Lincoln, I haven't actually looked at yet myself. But Pretty Faces is something he's been working on, and now he's working on the JBoss development team, and I believe he's even working on Seam at the moment, Seam 3.0. He put a post out up on ocpsoft.com, which is his site. Why doesn't, and then in parentheses, it's JPA, JMS, JTA, EJB, JSF, and CDI work? JEE is, quote, too complicated. Now, I mention this because we have a web framework shootout coming up as part of day two of our conference on the 9th.
And that should be pretty spirited, I would imagine.
Yes, it should. And actually, in his post, he starts out with, first, before reading this, and I'm quoting him, "You're going to be upset with me."
So, I like the end of that.
Yes.
Because anger inspires action.
Yes. So it's great when people throw this stuff out there, because it's good to have spirited debate. It's the only way you grow your process and you improve open source technologies is by debating them and beating them up, right? So his take, and I've read through this, but I'm not 100% sure I'm getting him right. He could certainly refute it when he's at ETE, is that, Java EE in the past has been very complicated to set up. And, if you're doing Java EE on Tomcat, for example, or for that matter, Jetty or something, you're generally writing something in a container like Spring, where you're letting Spring kind of wrap your services and your transactions and everything else so that you don't need something as complicated as EJB. And for any of us Java developers back in the early 2000s or the late 90s who started working with the servlet API, okay, servlet made sense. And then, okay, I need to do business logic. I got to write an EJB, XML, separate build process. It's not like that anymore. If you look at Java EE 5, EJB 3 dot whatever, it's a lot simpler to build them. You don't really have to do much XML at all. And actually, in the containers, like when he references GlassFish 3 or JBoss Application Service 6, it is a full Java EE container, and yet you can drop things in there that are like, you can just put like a simple web XML file out there and put an XHTML file in there and have a JSF application. And it has all of the jars built into the container. So he posits that as saying, take another look at Java EE, take a look at a container. And he even mentions GlassFish, which is kind of brave of him because that's, you know, that's from Sun, right? From the open source Sun containers. So he says, you know, you can work on GlassFish, you can work on JBoss, either one, and you have a fully functional container. And then, of course, the debate ensues. So it's an interesting post with a very interesting series of responses. It's great to talk about. It's something nice to take with you to ETE because I'm sure in the Web Framework Shootout, stuff's going to come out about that post.
Yeah, it sounds like that stuff always inspires that that level of debate. And my point – I was going to say that I can't remember what I was going
to
say.
Thought derailed.
Right.
I'm good at that.
I was going to say that, like most developers and myself included, that once I had gone through the early 2000s and the pain of setting up, enterprise service
EJBs
and such, mm-hmm. that I kind of left that. I left that dock. You know, right. I moved on, and now I do everything in Spring. You know, right. I'm doing my Java, framework and architecture. So.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of us went that direction. And meanwhile, Java EE had to play catch-up. And I think now it's really done a lot of catch-up. So the question is, you know, what's the adoption going to be like in the future? Oracle's taking it over. The one thing I think – is it him that says this about the Java community process? I think it is. Let me just double-check here. Yeah. Yeah. He actually is calling – and this is the more interesting part of it. He's calling for the Java community process to be more independent, so kind of like an Eclipse Foundation type of thing. Whereas, you know, in the past, the JCP is a little more closed in terms of who's on it. The big vendors are involved. And so he's hoping that Oracle kind of takes it and spins it out to a more open community, which should be interesting. If they do that, then things would move a little quicker in that space. And that's been the problem all along. It took Spring one release to suddenly take over a lot of people's minds because it just, oh, this is all I have to do to turn on transaction support and security. Done, you know, much less to set up. And it's going to take a lot more convincing back to say, hey, Java EE, we're cool again, you know, that we're the thing you want to work on. So it's an interesting debate. There certainly are a camp of developers that are working more in that realm, more of the enterprise developers that are given, here's your WebLogic server or here's your, you know, WebSphere server and here's the approved APIs and Spring isn't on it because we want to go Java EE. Then again, you could also use Java EE with Spring, you know, Java EE wrappers for things on Spring too. So interesting debate. And everyone who's not a Java developer is tuned out by now.
So. Very Java focused this week.
So let me pull it back from that. We have a couple things. One of them is Google just releasing something called Skipfish. Skipfish is, and if you look at the post, it's from blogs.zdnet.com from Garrett Rogers and Christopher Dawson are the writers here. They announced that Google has just released Skipfish, which is basically an application security scanning tool. The title doesn't really say scanning, but that's what it is. And the idea is you point Skipfish, which is a Google code project, you point it against your website, and it does all sorts of checks. It says, okay, so what does this app server identify itself as? And it uses heuristics to say, oh, this might be, let's say, a Spring app, or this might be a Rails app, or whatever it is. And then it goes and it does certain attacks and tries to break it. So something you want to look at if you're into application security, which we all should be, things like SQL injection. You want to pass, you know, your parameters, and you always want to try to decode them and get rid of those special escapes. And you don't want to just suddenly just run something in SQL just by concatenating the string that was submitted to you, because someone might put some SQL in there and do all sorts of nasty stuff. And that's just one of many types of attacks that are out there. So check it out. The actual project's at code.google.com/p/skipfish. That's an interesting one. And I think we have one more. If I can back myself back to the news, stand by. So, and then one more little, oh, there's two more actually. Let me throw out the Grails tidbit and you can take up the next one. So this is on mrhaki, mhaki.blogspot.com. I'm sure I mangled that. It's a two-line blog post. I love these. If you're doing Grails and you want to get your test output, but you don't want to go and browse through the actual output files, there's actually just a simple thing. You can say Grails test-app, and he gives you two command line arguments, which I'll push you to his blog rather than read it for you. But you take a look at that. It's a two-liner, and you get the actual output right to your
Yeah, you can echo, just basically echo out, echo error.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a couple of different options. It's better to look at on screen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Look at his blog, though. We'll give him credit.
Yep.
All right. And, Gordon, you have the last word here?
Yeah, the last thing, something that got launched earlier in the week, or earlier, I guess, last week. Whatever.
Yeah, it looks like
anyway,
last week. Yeah.
Was the SpringSource announced the TomcatExpert.com site. They basically set up a site for Tomcat experts to kind of get together and work on, contribute and collaborate on Tomcat information and to help each other out. And since SpringSource is such a has been so heavily invested in Tomcat in the last year or so, they really are now really showing some of the commitment level here by launching their own community site for that. Huh. So it's something to take a look at. If you're doing any Tomcat work or you're an expert in Tomcat, you can go there and participate.
Just a little teaser. The third one on the page right now, and who knows, it'll be pushed off by the time you read this, but it's explaining JDBC Pool, a high concurrency alternative to connection pooling. And they actually can rate and comment on these. So it looks like this one got a 5-star rating and a number of comments. So, yeah, interesting out there that people are, you know, talking about different – here's another one, three different schools of thought for managing production Tomcat infrastructures. Cool.
Well, good. Yeah, it's good because it just got launched less than a week ago, and there's already three, looks like, pretty good articles on there. Nice. I imagine that's going to pick up some steam. It's getting a lot of press and Twitter and throughout the news site. So.
Ooh, there's a knowledge base. Oh, cool stuff. Yeah, definitely check. If you're doing anything in Tomcat, you got to check this out. You actually even have the knowledge base available, and like the first thing that came up was how to configure log rotation in Tomcat using the Julie logging package. So stuff I wouldn't have thought about, and I'm sure if you're going to be doing any kind of QA or production support, you should scan through this now and then and see what's going on.
Sure.
All right. So that's the dev news this week. Again, it's very heavily Java focused. We have definitely people looking at things like Rails and other technologies as well will come in and out based on their time and what they find interesting. But if you want to find out more, you can head over to techcast.chariotsolutions.com to look at our RSS feed. One thing I'd like to note is we're actually getting to the point where we're soon going to run out of seats at Philadelphia Emerging Tech. We only have about 40 or 50 left, and they're closing fast. So if you want to go to the show April 8th and 9th, it's a fantastic show for the money. It's only, I think, $325.
I forget the price, but it's certainly loaded with some significant industry leaders for various topics from Java, from Ruby and Rails to your Scrum Masters, any of those folks that come. There's some really impressive body of speakers that we have this year.
Yep.
So it's not something trivial and a bunch of local guys that are just kind of sitting around talking about tech. These are some real heavy hitters that are flying in from all over the globe to speak.
Yeah, very big names. I mean, just off the top of our heads, it's like we've got Uncle Bob Martin, like one of the founders of the Agile movement. We've got Michael Cote, who's the other keynote speaker, who's a big blogger and analyst around cloud computing. We've got Big Nerd Ranch, who was just featured on the This Week in Tech show, mm-hmm. Or actually Mac Break Weekly.
Mary Poppendieck, who's a renowned speaker for the Scrum Agile movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many, many different and widely varied. So you can literally take people of your IS team. If you have testing people, there's something for them. If you have people doing business analysis or people who are actually like managers, great stuff around there. There's even one like how to know whether your developers are BSing you on timeline.
Right.
You know, from someone who's been in the trenches for years and years and years. All over the map. So not to hawk it too much, but it's phillyemergingtech.com. And go there, see if you can get a seat. Because once it fills up, we have people constantly beating down our doors saying, can you get us into? And then you might be too late. So anyway, that's it. So for the dev news, I'm Ken Rempel.
And Gordon Dickens.
And you make it a good week. For more information about Chariot Solutions, including our education and consulting services, visit chariotsolutions.com. During the show, we may mention projects written by our partners. A list of them is available at Chariot's website, as well as on our podcast homepage, techcast.chariotsolutions.com. Want to leave us feedback? Send an email to techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com, or you can leave us messages on Twitter. The user is @techcast, or you can post a message with #techcast as a hashtag. Our themes are Free Theme No. 3 and Free Theme No. 4 from podcastthemes.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rempel.